interview was conducted with Charles L. Brown for the Purdue University Oral History Program. It took place on Wednesday, March 28, 2007 at his home in West Lafayette. The interviewer is Catherine Marquis, the Oral History Librarian. Welcome. Tell us a little bit about where you were born and your parents and siblings.
Well, I can't be very definitive about my very earliest life. Well, let's see. I need to go back a bit. My father was born on a hardscrabble farm in Pennsylvania, and I gather that the family was big enough that they rarely were kind of living a marginal level of life. And the one unique thing about that general area was that the Drake Well was not terribly far away. In that era, if you talked about oil, you were talking about greasy springs that came to the surface in certain areas, and people had figured out some things they could use this oil for lubrication, that sort of thing. And because my father's family was pretty marginal as far as income was concerned, that they discussed the situation, and he was not the youngest, I don't think. No, I think he was maybe the next youngest. That perhaps he was an able-bodied kid. Maybe he ought to go down to where Mr. Drake had gotten the idea that instead of just scraping up this stuff from the surface, you drill the well down, maybe you could collect quite a bit of it and make some money on it. And he went down. He was as well off to work on an oil well as anybody, because nobody had any experience. Well, I'm putting in too much there. The point was that he did go down, he did get a job, and began to learn some of the things that the rest of the people there were also learning, so that going from basically a state of pretty complete ignorance about the nature of this sort of thing, people were beginning to get a handle on how you can maybe make a decent living getting this oil out of the ground and treating it various ways to improve its characteristic. And that was the real beginning. The next step in the process, there were apparently even at that time these little seeps of oil and that sort of thing, and people were looking seriously for these, and it was becoming a recognized activity. And it seemed that the newer deposits, well, newer in the sense that they were trying to exploit them, seemed to stretch from the Pennsylvania original attempt pretty much west, over into Indiana a bit, and into Illinois. And he, my father, followed these expansions. And in due time, he ended up near Bridgeport, Illinois, which is a small town off the Mississippi River, opposite the Indiana locale, and had acquired more and more of the know-how, so that he pretty well decided to make a career out of drilling for oil. And somehow, I've never been provided with details. He met my mother there. She came from a family of a bunch of kids. The father, I think, of the family was something of a ne'er-do-well. Not he. That was one of the kids, one of the older kids, maybe. But at any rate, I think that by this time, the adults in the family, the first generation, were no longer alive, and the kids sort of formed a clan, and they took care of themselves. The older ones, of course, took more responsibility, and they tried to, as much as feasible, to select careers that they would try to pursue, and they selected such a variety that each one made some contribution to maintaining the family, and they were doing fairly well. My mother was one of the older ones. She worked in a bank, and as I say, I don't know how mother and father got together originally. Billy says he probably went to deposit his paycheck in the bank, and she was the teller there. But anyhow, it happened. They decided that the oil was headed south. There had been some major finds in Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and the freelancers were headed that way because that was where the jobs were. And they took off for Texas, and about the next item where I can remember specifically learning this, there was a picture in their album when I was big enough to look at it that showed my mother holding this fat baby, and that was I. We were in a town called Ranger, which was just a small place, and that was my birthplace.
And when were you, when we were born, what year were you born?
1920.
In Texas, in that town in Texas.
Ranger, Texas, yeah.
Then from grade school, what?
I don't remember much.
Which
for
did you go to high school?
Several years, okay. Of course.
Did you go to high school there, too? in Texas?
Did I?
Did you go to high school in Texas? Or your father, was he, did he move around or did he stay there?
Oh, he moved around.
Mm-hmm.
And,
he moved about once a year.
Oh, yeah, but that was quite a bit later on, because I was still
very small,
just a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a number of years, I don't have any recollections.
Tell us a little then about your high school and college, and where did you go to college then? And
well,
how did that come about?
In the places that I went to, some sort of school. The town of Mexia, M-E-X-I-A, Texas, was, I guess, about the first place that I remember quite a bit of detail about.
That would have been a high school age?
No, that was grammar school.
Grade school, okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Good.
In my head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ah,
uh-huh.
Let's see. I'm sorting this out.
You were in Waco, I think. Waco.
Yeah, Waco, I guess, for a short
okay.
Although Waco is a little bigger than Mexia, although they both still exist now, I just can't really tell you.
Tell us a little bit. Now you went to Purdue.
I was still.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit your higher education, and that's fine.
Well, let's see.
When you were about, what was it, age when your dad quit his job with the oil company and went to school?
Yeah.
Went to the university at Norman, Oklahoma.
He was there. I
had a couple of years.
I think I went to a school, but it was just a grade school level. He had by this time become quite experienced from just being involved in all these activities. But the industry was changing very rapidly. And they were applying science.
About what years would this be? In the 30s, perhaps? Or?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Late 20s and 30s, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
It was, he got out of college. He didn't graduate, but he finished his college work. In 19, I think it was 32,
his father
went through the Depression. But got a job with Pure Oil Company, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, I should fill in a little bit there.
Okay.
He
father.
Well, the industry was changing. They were applying science. It wasn't hit and pack and luck. And he needed then some science, and he had never graduated from high school. He checked around, and he found that the University of Oklahoma was embracing oil, and they were offering courses scientific aspect there, but he'd never even graduated from high school. Well, he was never a guy to be fazed by problems. He wrote first to the Dean of Engineering at OU and got an invite to come up and talk. And he did. things were less formal than they are about many things today. But they worked out a scheme whereby he would come, my father, attend classes in such areas as geology, chemistry, things like that, where you're getting the science associated with doing chemical processes and modifying the stuff you were dealing with. He would get no kind of a degree, but he would attend classes, he would take the tests along with the regular students, and he would get a letter from the Dean of Engineering attesting that he had done these kinds of things. Again, nothing formal.
Sure.
Well, was it 2 years, do you remember?
No,
two years. Well, then it was time to move back to where the action was. And we packed up and went to Dallas. Because Dallas was expanding and really being a center at that time of oil. We moved down there and he started looking for a job with this new background. And he took up with the Pure Oil Company. I don't know whether Pure is still in existence or not.
I don't think so.
I think they were absorbed by...
Like so many.
Something. But at any rate, he not only got a job with them, but he got a job as the superintendent of a particular oil field. Now, I'm not talking about something it's statewide, but
a particular
it was
site.
Typical of the modest-sized fields of the day. Pure hired him, meeting with the superintendent of this new field, and they built the warehouses and houses for the workmen and all this sort of thing. And, I had been in grade school while the 2 years while we were in Oklahoma. And I guess I still went to grade school in Dallas. I went to grade school. And for the life of me, I can't remember whether I was in high school at that oil field camp. I suspect I was, because I think we were there for several years. And he was running operations there. The feeling, apparently, among supervisors, the executives in the oil business, was that his combination of the basic science involved plus his field experience, that they had hold of a pretty good thing there. And they shipped him to a new job at the main office of the company in Chicago. And we packed up and went to Chicago, found a apartment which was in the near North Side, and Pure had a building of their own in the Loop, was assigned a job there, and they set about teaching him the things that about running a business in general, of course, dealing with taxes and all of it. And I don't remember how long we were there. I had a couple of years, probably.
About a year, I think.
Was it just a year? Anyhow, by then I was popped into high school. And so I was going to high school. We were living in an apartment, as I said. As a matter of fact, it was just south of Lincoln Park. And that provided a nice bit of a little more of a reminder of the countryside rather than just the big city. Although I had a hell of a good time in Chicago. It was the first big city that
and you could appreciate it at that age.
Yeah, that's right. And I was in high school there. But we were only there a couple of years, maybe. That was maybe not even that much. Because they were just teaching him the things that he had no background in about running a company. And I should mention right now, although he never ended up as president of the company, he had two or three specific assignments, both of which involved both his background with the mechanics of getting the oil out of the ground and all that sort of thing, and with what he picked up there in Chicago. As a matter of fact, while we were there, because of what some of the, especially the geology and the like, that he'd learned at Oklahoma, he was briefly detached from what he was supposed to be learning there about management in Chicago, and sent out to two different well locations where they were running into problems, and the problems were tied with the geology of the formations, and he had a good solid look at geology at OU, so he was the one that knew what to do, so they shipped it to each one. Yeah. So, yeah.
As you finished your high school.
Yeah. And Dad was sent there when they felt that he had learned his apprenticeship. And he was, I can't tell you just what his title and particular tasks there in Houston, but at Houston he did play a fairly major role. Houston was the top office for what they called the Gulf Coast Division, which was Houston, Louisiana. And other areas. I was very good. And he was a sharp guy. And he was one hell of a fellow. And he really settled in. He finished essentially his employment along the Gulf Coast area.
Manager for the entire Gulf Coast area.
Yeah.
Which included offshore.
They, that company drilled a lot of the wells out in the Gulf of Mexico. They were the first, I think, to do just this sort of thing. And again, he was in charge of that operation. So he went from the kid that didn't have much schooling to an adult that turned out pretty well. I certainly know I owe a lot of what I was able to make use of to things I learned from him.
Did you have any brothers or sisters? Are you an only child?
I have a sister. As a matter of fact, she is here in Lafayette. While I was still enrolled and, well, not enrolled, I was teaching by then. I had a...
My father came up here, you know.
Yeah.
She's been here about 15 years or so.
I brought her up here. She had been married and it was not a very fortunate marriage. She came up here and my idea was hoping that with her what she did know about the oil business and maybe other things, and she ought to be able to get some sort of a job with Purdue. She ultimately got a job with the,
Financial aid department.
Financial aid for the students. And she's a kind of, can be a kind of a personal gal, personable. And she apparently fit in there and did pretty well. And eventually retired. And we again took over handling some of her affairs and the like. And at present, she's in
Heritage Healthcare right now, although she's improving her health so that we think she can go back to her former status at Green Tree.
So, she is here.
Right. Now,
I have no other...
tell us a little bit about, I had asked you earlier about how you ended coming to Purdue for your education and then stayed on. How did you happen to apply to Purdue?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I had no thought, as well as I can recall, of becoming a college professor. I simply wanted to pay my own way once I'd gotten, well, I'm jumping ahead, because I got my college work mostly in Houston, and
Advice.
And years at Purdue. Well, of course, she came from not too far from here. And, well, so I applied to Purdue. And one of the professors there had been at Rice and had later moved up to Purdue, and he knew the general level of the coursework at Rice and so on, and so he recommended they offer me a teaching assistantship. Here I am.
And then after you got your degree at Purdue, you stayed on?
Yeah.
You were here during, in fact, during the war, with some of the special project that you worked on.
I think, surely I had spoken about that earlier,
right,
in some of the very first,
right,
times.
Yeah.
So
Which, yeah, gotcha. But you did a couple things that you were involved in. You share those with us.
And with the war over and hordes of people flooding back to school, I was promptly offered an assistant professorship at that stage, because I had gotten sufficiently far for that. And I can't remember how long I was a teaching assistant, an assistant professor. Of course, later, as you know, I got a full professorship. So my mother was the answer as to how I got here in the first place.
After the war, then, the campus was pretty crowded? People coming back?
A lot of the GIs were at the age that they were really young enough to need more education, most of them, and sufficiently enthusiastic about things. And others that were not up to staff members, but they just wanted a degree, and so there was a demand for people to teach all this horde of GIs returning to their academic lives.
What was the, during the war, where there were students here that did not serve, but then the influx came after the war, was the campus enrollment increased after the war more so than during the war? You see, as far as the enrollment, it's
Pretty much, although, really, from the standpoint of the universities, the war didn't end with Gringo signing the surrender. It was so many of the soldiers were of such an age that they would have, except for the war, have been in regular college or graduate school, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted an education. So the university was hiring just about everybody they thought could do the job.
Big influx. Yeah, I see. Do you, can you share any special project that you worked on, or you want to tell us just a little bit?
I had talked some about that. And then
it's up to you.
Machine gun.
You tested that. Yeah, right.
the bulk of what I did as a teaching assistant, actually, was research work. It wasn't really highfalutin research. It was people just trying out ideas that sounded like they might be worthwhile. And I think most of what I did at research level was, I think I've talked about this, the machine gun that we were able to get it to do very long periods of sustained fire by cooling it with various and sundry things like carbon black. You know, we use that gun in connection with oil to lick the problem that the Army and Air Force both came to Purdue begging for help was to be able to have high sustained rates of fire without essentially destroying the gun. So what we came up with really was a kind of cooling scheme which did allow those sustained rates. They used them in aircraft. They were in fighter aircraft, and then they installed them in bombers so that the people in the bombers could shoot back at the fighters. And I do feel a real pride in that, because it was just a small group of people. There were four or five or six professors who certainly made major contributions, and maybe about twice that many graduate students who sometimes provided new ideas, and sometimes we just provided strong backs and willingness to work. But we all, I think, were in that not very big group. It was within the School of Mechanical Engineering, and we think we made a real contribution to the war effort, and apparently we kind of pleased the powers that be here at Purdue, because as I recall, just about every one of us ultimately ended up with a professorship. Assistant to begin with, of course, but okay, you're up that far.
President Elliott was the president when you first came, and then you were Humpty, and you were here when Dr. Hansen was here too, or when did you retire from Purdue?
When did I retire?
You retired in 1984. Oh, so then Hansen, Jr., and then Baring too. So you served under Elliott, and then Humpty, and Hansen, and Dr. Baring. Dr. Baring came in 83. Oh,
yeah. And there was a certain amount of turnover in department chairman and that sort of thing.
Oh, I imagine. Right. Yeah.
Not all of us were in the same department. We were gathered together. When I say us, I mean the ones that were the grad assistants during the war. Well, the aura was there, because it was unique. That was never before, and I think probably later it returned, but the Army and the Navy, they came to Purdue and said, "We've got some problems. Can you help us?" Now, it wasn't quite that simple. Just ahead of that, my major professor and several other major professors looked around at these strong backs and we hoped strong minds that were sort of languishing here on the campus. The campus was of course stirred in a number of ways by the advent of the war, and we just hadn't. We are, they hadn't had an experience like that before. And I think that was one of the perhaps remarkable things, is that the faculty and to some extent the assistants and such like really felt obligation to do what we could. And I suspect there were people in the vicinity in town and so on who felt that we were taking advantage of our college connections to weasel out of fighting in the war. Maybe some of us were. I know that when I found out the major problem that they wanted to tackle first, that I was delighted. I said, we're only graduate students. We've had a lot of science and engineering, and we've been making some pretty good grades, so maybe we did know a bunch of stuff that was really worthwhile. And I certainly was delighted at the opportunity make what I hoped was going to be a contribution.
Got any, looking back over the time, is there a particular favorite memory that you have of Purdue that you'd like to share with us? Anything that kind of sticks in your mind?
Oh, Lord, no. Not offhand.
Any, special...
So many things that,
Well, perhaps rephrase it. Once you were settled in, you were comfortable, did you ever entertain any thoughts of perhaps going to another academic institution?
Oh, no.
There wasn't, I think years ago there seemed to be more movement, people would move around, but now over time I think it's come back the other way, they're content to stay. But there's always going to be people who want to move around, you know, to individual things.
One thing that occurs to me, by the time I had reached retirement age, the graduate school at Purdue was large. When I first came